This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 21st, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 291. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, catching up with the mayor of Port Coquitlam. I ask Mayor Brad West about his vacation to Taiwan, his meeting with the Secretary of State in the U.S., and his trip to Parliament Hill. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome back to the podcast to the mayor of Port Coquitlam, Brad West, who's my guest this week. Mayor West has had a busy spring with a lot on his plate locally, nationally, and internationally. He is an outspoken critic of the Chinese Communist Party and its influence on Canada. Just when you think you've heard it all, the latest revelations from CSIS in the Globe and Mail are about the former Public Safety Minister Bill Blair. Bill Blair allegedly slowed down an investigation into an Ontario Liberal power broker, Michael Chan.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Bob. And, the drip, drip, drip continues. And really, this shows why we need a full, independent, comprehensive public inquiry, because I think we're only scratching the surface on the ways in which the government of China has been able to spread its influence, and apparently with a great deal of success. The example that you cite about waiting 4 months is, I think, just the tip of the iceberg. Government has been incredibly reluctant to do anything on this issue. The things that they have done, they've done because they've been forced to because of public outrage. And I think we're only scratching the surface. And, it's just an absolute requirement, in my view, that we have something that's way more broad, comprehensive, and goes from, the very bottom to the very top of government in rooting out the ways in which the Chinese Communist Party has been able to really establish spheres of influence.
This also comes shortly after the expulsion of a diplomat from the Chinese embassy for the campaign of intimidation against Conservative MP Michael Chong. It seems like just when you think that this whole scandal has reached a tipping point, something else comes along that supersedes it.
It's really amazing. Like, I don't know when we're going to hit rock bottom. Feels like we still have a ways to go, because you're right. Just when you think that you've seen the last of it, there's something else that that comes forward. And, I think all of this is very illustrative of the fact that the government of China has been very successful over a long period of time of ingratiating themselves to people in power, to really establishing spheres of influence, as I said. To the point where they have to engage in the most egregious level of conduct and behavior for our government to do anything about it. There seems to be almost no line that they can't cross, with very little in the way of reaction or consequences, which, again, I think is just the result of a orthodoxy that has taken hold in government at a variety of levels over many decades, which has rendered our country very weak when it comes to these issues, dealing with these issues, and incredibly impotent in terms of our response.
This is a very interesting time for Taiwan, and there's a lot of parallels between Taiwan and Canada, and a lot of new networking that's happening. The BC government has just opened a trade office in Taipei, so there's this effort to try to draw us closer to Taiwan. To talk about your visit to Taiwan, what did you experience there, and What was the prevailing attitude of the Taiwanese that you talked to?
Well, it was an incredible trip. The Taiwanese people are generous and courageous, living under constant threat as they do from the Chinese Communist Party, yet being so resolved in their commitment to democracy and to human rights, I think very aware of the need for them to be constantly progressing in those areas as well. And it was a wonderful trip. The conversations with the people were very inspiring to me. Such a a really a universe of shared values between Canadians and the Taiwanese people. As I said, I think the attitude is one of resolve. They're incredibly proud of their president, who, as you noted, in my view, has been one of the most courageous world leaders in terms of staring down authoritarianism. When you consider that, our government officials, our elected leadership can, barely muster a negative comment or a contrary comment about the Chinese Communist Party. And yet, the leader of Taiwan, who faces serious threats, both militarily but in a number of other ways, has been so courageous in her support of her people and of democracy and human rights and freedom. I just think that that says it all. I'm hopeful. You referenced a couple of positive steps where, there's opportunities for greater relationship between British Columbia, Canada, and Taiwan. I'm hopeful that we're seeing some steps in the right direction. I mean, this is really, I think, the work that the world has to do. We should be deepening our relationship with those who share our values, who share our commitment to law, who share our commitment to democracy, who share our commitment to human rights, who aren't engaged in a genocide as the government of China is against the Uyghur people. And so this is exactly what we should be doing. And there are others that we need to build those relationships with as well.
It's the size, roughly the size of Vancouver Island, and I always marvel at how they are managing to fit 23 to 24 million people on the main island of Taiwan, yet still have space for agriculture and still have space for a natural environment, places to go hiking, biking.
You're absolutely bang on. And my wife and I had the opportunity to also take the high speed rail to Kaohsiung, and we were able to do some hiking and some exploring around there. And it was just a stellar experience. And you're right. I marveled at their ability to fit it all in. I guess in many respects. And you're right, you didn't have that sense of overcrowding, or being in a concrete jungle. They've done a wonderful job of preserving natural areas. Even in Taipei, the number of unexpected parks and green spaces, and so lots to take inspiration from as we go about our work in Metro Vancouver.
Now you also traveled down to a conference in Colorado, I believe, to meet a number of other municipal leaders. But you also had a chance to meet with the U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken. Tell me about how that came about.
Yeah, that one surprised me. It felt slightly above my pay grade, I'll be honest, but it was it was felt very honored and fortunate to be asked to meet with Secretary Blinken. An invitation came through the U.S. Embassy in Canada, and they said that the secretary was very interested in meeting with me, along with a mayor from Mexico and the mayor of Denver, to talk about the work that our three countries need to do to combat drug trafficking, specifically around fentanyl, and all of the domino effects that go along with it. And I believe the reason for wanting to get down to a local level is because, of course, so many of the impacts are felt locally as well. And I think that obviously I've been very outspoken on the issue of fentanyl and money laundering and transnational criminal organizations, you know, the so-called Vancouver model, of course, which has become infamous around the world for all, you know, for all the wrong reasons. And so I think because of my track record of speaking out on these issues, that's why I was invited to meet with the secretary. So I did meet with them along with the mayors of Tijuana and Denver. We spent just over an hour together. I would say it was a very candid and substantive discussion, a lot of back and forth. You know, I've been to other meetings, meetings with, you know, some of our own Canadian high-ranking officials, and you're lucky to have 15 or 20 minutes with them. And it's really difficult to have a substantive discussion, but this was not that. So I felt very privileged to be a part of that. Secretary Blinken said that President Biden has instructed him to build a global coalition against fentanyl and those who deal in the death and misery of, you know, thousands of our citizens. And so we had a significant and lengthy discussion about the ways in which we can do that. And, you know, he encouraged me to continue to be outspoken in the need for our country to work hand in hand with the United States and Mexico and countries around the world, and to do more, because in so many respects, unfortunately, Canada is very behind and is sort of has the soft underbelly that these transnational criminal organizations are able to exploit. Weakness in our laws, weakness in our enforcement of our laws, you know, a seeming lack of ability to prosecute individuals who engage in this, and probably a lack of resources for policing agencies to be able to go toe-to-toe with fairly sophisticated criminal organizations.
Port Coquitlam, like many communities around BC, has been touched by this. The Vancouver model, which you spoke of, which readers may not understand, is the dynamic between you know, the real estate industry, casinos, and the illicit drug industry, and that involves precursors from China, chemicals from China being bought and processed by criminal syndicates in Mexico, and the cartels in Mexico, and then sent up to the United States and Canada. That's at its most simplest. It's wrecked the downtown east side of Vancouver, and it's also having a great impact far beyond the downtown east side in communities around the province, affecting a lot of men between, you know, the 30s and 50s.
But 100% correct. And what impressed me about Secretary Blinken is his willingness to name what is going on. And he articulated it almost exactly as you did, and very specifically called out the Chinese government and their role in being the center of fentanyl precursor production. And for a government that exercises maximum control and authoritarianism over their country, the idea that they couldn't stop or at least significantly reduce the export of fentanyl precursors is just laughable. But they have shown no interest or willingness in addressing that at all. And so it's incumbent then upon our governments to strongly put this issue to the front of the agenda and to take the steps to reduce, as you say, the poison that is pouring into our countries and killing so many of our people. But I really respected the fact that he called out the model exactly as you described it, by name. And he was very clear that, you know, if we're not upfront about the actors who are involved in this and the governments that either support it or turn a blind eye to it, we will never be able to address it. And again, I just contrast that to what I see in our country, where there's I have not, and maybe I missed it, but I follow very closely. I have never heard a federal official in our country identify China as an issue as it relates to fentanyl. And so the devastation that it has caused, as you said, is extensive. It touches every community. It touches all sorts of families, regardless of socioeconomic factors. And it is one of the most pressing issues of our time that needs to be addressed before the body count continues to climb exponentially.
You've received a lot of plaudits for keeping the property tax burden low in Port Coquitlam in recent years. And a lot of citizens in other municipalities are envious, who are paying a higher bill this year. One thing that you are also doing in Port Coquitlam is, again, keeping the memory alive of Terry Fox. And a lot of Canadians were disappointed recently to see the new passport design without the page that's been there for the last 10 years that features Terry Fox. You were in Ottawa with the Mayor's Council trying to get more funding for expanding the Metro Vancouver transportation system. But did you have a chance to talk to any of the politicians there in the government and express displeasure that Terry Fox is being taken out of the passport?
Well, it certainly did come up in discussion with a number of MPs. And I just want to note for the record, in case anyone was ever confused about it, I'm an unabashed advocate for the working and middle class in this country. And that's really where I take my inspiration from. And the positions I take on issues, which sometimes bucks conventional wisdom or orthodoxy, or certainly the status quo of most of the political elite in our country, is because I think that their leadership, and I use that kind of half-heartedly, has been so woefully lacking for working middle-class people in our country. And there's all sorts of issues that matter to working and middle-class people. And Terry Fox is one of them. And I noticed that some people on Twitter, particularly those who are probably knee-jerk partisans, dismiss it as a non-issue. But I have heard from literally hundreds of Canadians who feel strongly about this. What I think happened is that I think the bureaucracy was doing something and no elected official, no politician was paying attention until it came out. And then their knee-jerk response is to double down and defend rather than say, hey, maybe we got this wrong. No government is going to be able to eliminate the memory or legacy of Terry Fox, but symbols can be important. And the fact of the matter is that he was in the passport, and there was no reason why he couldn't continue to be. Terry Fox was a working class Canadian. His family is a working class family from Port Coquitlam. Lived in a very working class neighborhood. And I think that Canadians across this country identify with him because he was a regular person who summoned extraordinary courage and strength and resilience to be able to do something extraordinary. And every single day working class Canadians summon that same courage and strength to be able to do things for their families, to sacrifice for their families, to try and make life a little bit better for their children. Anyways, I think that's why Canadians across all sorts of, from all sorts of cultural and ethnic backgrounds, Canadians who have maybe had their family been in this country for generations, Canadians who are new Canadians, all connect and draw inspiration from Terry Fox. So I was able to have some discussion with it, about it with a number of members of parliament. And I note that my own federal member of parliament for Coquitlam, Port Coquitlam, who is a member of the Liberal Party, a government MP, Ron McKinnon, has spoken publicly now about his opposition to the change. And so I'm holding out hope that the government will listen to the voices of Canadians.
TransLink does have a history, I'm sure you're full aware of it, of not always spending money wisely and sometimes doing business with those that maybe shouldn't be doing business with. It did a lot of business over the years with SNC-Lavalin, of course, which in other jurisdictions got into major criminal trouble for corruption. How is the mayor's council, especially with you as the leader, going to make sure it strikes that balance, that if it does get that federal money that it needs in order to expand like it needs to expand with a growing region, at the same time, make sure that that money is spent properly?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important that the two things go hand in hand. You're right. We do need better service for our growing region. That is just a reality. Public transit is not some sort of nice to have. It's a must have. It's as essential to the operation of our society as is our utilities, our water, all the rest of it. And so that's why we were in Ottawa taking that message and advocating for the federal government to step up and fulfill its responsibilities and its roles in respect to supporting, you know, major metro regions in the operation of transit and transportation service to citizens of the country, and getting some of that taxpayer money that leaves Metro Vancouver, you know, to the tune of billions of dollars every year and goes to Ottawa, getting some of that reinvested in this region in the form of better transportation service for our residents. And at the same time, you're quite right. We need to ensure that TransLink is operating efficiently and productively as possible. And people need to have confidence in that. And certainly as the chair of the Mayor's Council, I will be stretching the bounds of what we are able to do at the Mayor's Council to ensure that that's the case. I will also note that the Mayor's Council is advocating, has advocated, and is going to step up its advocacy of changes to TransLink's governance to address the concerns that exist around public accountability and oversight. And some people may recall that when he was in government, Kevin Falcon was the one who designed the current system, which has placed oversight and oversight and accountability and responsibility for management decisions in the hands of a board of directors rather than the mayor's council. And so I am certainly speaking about that issue to the provincial minister of transportation, am advocating to him that we need governance changes to TransLink to address those issues, and that it is the elected leadership of the Metro Vancouver region through the Mayor's Council that should be having far greater oversight and authorities and powers as it relates to TransLink than they currently have because of the changes that Kevin Falcon had created back when he was in government. And so that is an issue that I think needs to continue to be on the table, and we're going to press on that so that the people of this region can have confidence that every dollar received by TransLink is being wisely spent to deliver services.
Well, thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Brad West, the mayor of Port Coquitlam, and also the chair of the TransLink Mayor's Council.
Thank you.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan fines Taiwanese woman for attending China's National People's Congress. Ling Yushi still owes a fine of $22,000 Canadian for previous attendance at 2019 conference. At the 14th session of the NPC in March, Ling proposed that China's One Country, Two Systems formula on Taiwan should be changed into a One Country, One System plan, so both would have the same political and education system. She also pleaded for the integration of Taiwan's military into China's People's Liberation Army. In Kyoto news, Japan's bid to get closer to India for security may worry U.S. India and the United States have been at odds over values that Washington prioritizes, such as human rights, with Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister, who took office in 2014, seen as clamping down on critics of his government. Given the rising geopolitical tensions in the Indo-Pacific region, Japan, an Asian power and close U.S. security ally, should build trust with India while respecting their differences and without imposing Western values on New Delhi, pundits said. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong court rejects media tycoon Jimmy Lai's bid to challenge National Security Committee decision. In a legal challenge filed last month, the Apple Daily founder Jimmy Lai argued that a National Security Committee had overstepped its powers by advising the Immigration Department to refuse future visa applications from Lai's British lawyer. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, commentary, John Mellencamp's new song about homelessness in Portland is very bad. Mellencamp's new song, The Eyes of Portland, is all about the main thing people who don't live in Portland love to talk about, how destroyed the city is. People who live in Portland know that we have some problems. There are people struggling, living outside or in their vehicles. The drug situation is terrifying and dangerous. Yet Portland is also a lovely city, full of beautiful parks, quiet streets, trees, rivers, bike paths, restaurants, friends, shops, ice cream, donuts. It might be the best major city in the entire country. Might be. It is. In the Bellingham Herald, Weather Service sets its outlook for summer in Western Washington. Expect a warmer than normal summer with less rainfall. That could be from the influence of a growing El Nino weather phenomenon, which usually means a warmer and drier winter for the Northwest. Snowpack in the North Cascades near Bellingham is now 68% of normal, down from 89% or normal in March. In Czech news, thanks for all the belly rubs. Winston, the Empress greeter to retire after 4-year career. The beloved dog started at the Empress Hotel in January 2019 and quickly gained local and international attention. Winston had initially started training to be a guide dog for blind people, but did not make the cut. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all the people that keep national and provincial parks beautiful and accessible. It's RVing and camping week in BC from May 23rd to 28th. you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 21st, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 21st of May in 1927, Charles Lindbergh landed in Paris? It was the first non-stop solo flight across the Atlantic. And 5 years later, on the same day, Amelia Earhart landed in Derry, Northern Ireland, the first solo flight across the Atlantic by a woman. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.